Today we are reading from Canto 3, Chapter 14. Chapter 14 is entitled Pregnancy of Diti in the Evening. Today we are on text 29. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. Translation. Demigods like Brahma also follow the religious rites observed by him. He is the controller of the material energy, which causes the creation of the material world. He is great, and therefore his devilish characters are simply imitation. Purport. Lord Shiva is the husband of Durga, the controller of the material energy. Durga is personified material energy, and Lord Shiva, being her husband, is the controller of the material energy. He is also the incarnation of the mode of ignorance and one of the three deities representing the Supreme Lord. As his representative, Lord Shiva is identical with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He is very great, and his renunciation of all material enjoyment is an ideal example of how one should be materially unattached. One should therefore follow in his footsteps and be unattached to matter, not imitate his uncommon activities like drinking poison. Om Agyanatimirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamahyam Dadati Svakadantikam Mukam Karoti Vachalam Pangum Langayate Krivim Yatripatamaham Vande Shri Guru Dinatarinam Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripasindubhyayevacha Patitanam Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaurava Bhaktavrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna. So we see in this chapter, the chapter is entitled Pregnancy of Diti in the Evening. And just to give a bit of a context before we get into today's verse. In this chapter, actually the inquiry is being done that why was it that there was a fight between the Lord and his dear devotee who have come down as demons. So that question was raised, and now it is described how the two great demons of the world, Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha, were born. So that is being described in the Bhagavatam right now. And in context to that, it was described that Diti, who was the wife of Kashyapa Muni, she was afflicted with sexual desire, and more so because she did not have any children. And she was comparing herself with her co-wives, who were her sisters as well. And she was thinking, all of them have children, but I am the only one who doesn't have children. So she was feeling very bereft of that fulfillment. And Prabhupada says in many places in the Bhagavatam that for a woman to become a mother, to have children, it's her greatest need after she gets married. And it is the duty of the husband actually to fulfill that need of the woman of getting children, of begetting children in the marriage. So Diti was afflicted with that desire. She wants children, and therefore she wanted to have union with Kashyapa Muni. And she approaches Kashyapa Muni to satisfy that desire. Now she does not realize, because she was, you know, she was under the control of the Vegas or the senses which were impelling her to do this act. She did not realize her discriminating power had gone away at that time, because she was under the control of her senses. And she did not realize that it is an inappropriate time. It was evening actually, it was a sandhya time, afternoon and like night. So it was dusk time going on. And she approached Kashyapa Muni, who was actually sitting in meditation, who was doing his evening trance. He was doing his evening activities. And that time she approaches Kashyapa Muni for union. And then the next few verses describe how Kashyapa Muni tries to tell her. First, he glorifies the position of a wife. And in the Prabhupada gives very beautiful purports, how wife can control the husband. Actually, the grahasthashram or this material world is called as Durg. And the wife is called as Durga, the controller. So she actually can control the husband's uncontrolled senses. She can help the husband not to go wayward with his uncontrolled senses and be on track on the path of spiritual realization. That is an important role which a wife can play. And that is the words with which Kashyapa Muni is glorifying Diti. But then it is the duty, because he is obviously more self-realized than Diti. So he is trying to warn her that this is not an appropriate time. It is the evening time, it is Sandhya time. And during this time actually Lord Shiva roams around in the sky along with his followers, the ghosts and the goblins. And he is actually looking for people who are doing this activity of sexual union at this inappropriate time, because he wants to give bodies to these ghosts and goblins. He is so much caring about the welfare of these ghosts and goblins that he wants them to have material bodies. But who, where does even, which wombs can he put them? For someone who is following dharma and who is having husband and wife are uniting in proper dharmic way, obviously in such wombs he cannot put these ghosts and goblins. So he is looking for people who are inappropriately having sex, not considering time, not considering place, not considering circumstance, not considering any ill effects. Just they are having sex because they wanted to, they felt like having, just to satisfy their senses. So Shiva is looking for such people and he puts these type of living entities into such wombs. So Kashyapa Muni is warning Diti about the ill effect of having sex at this time. And then he starts glorifying. There is glorification of Lord Shiva which is mentioned in these few verses which are going on. And we've been hearing since the last few days the speakers glorifying Lord Shiva. And today also this verse is glorifying the position of Lord Shiva. That Lord Shiva is so great, he is one of the 12 Mahajans. During the conversation between Yamaraj and Yamadutas, after the Ajamil pastime, the Yamadutas have been defeated by the Vishnu Dutas. They were not successful in taking Ajamil away to Patala Loka. And therefore they go back to Yamaraj. They felt that Yamaraj was the ultimate controller. And because they have been sent, because Ajamil was sinful and they have been sent to bring him, but somehow their efforts were not fulfilled because of the intervention of the Vishnu Dutas. They go back to Yamaraj and they ask him, what happened? Why were we not successful? Ajamil was actually a person who was very sinful. But we were not able to bring him back. And during that conversation, Yamaraj, because Yamaraj himself is also a great personality, so he is glorifying, he tells them, he is glorifying the potency of the holy name, how Ajamil chanted the holy name and therefore he was protected by the Vishnu Dutas. And at that time, he tells that there are 12 Mahajans who know the religious principles, and one of the Mahajan is Lord Shiva. So Lord Shiva, Mahajano yena gatha sapantha. So Lord Shiva is an example in whose footsteps we should follow, whose example we should follow and not imitate, as Prabhupada says in the purport. And one of the greatest examples which people fail to follow about Lord Shiva is his detachment. Now we see here in the purport, Prabhupada mentions that Lord Shiva is actually the husband of the controller of the material energy. He is the husband of Goddess Parvati, who is a form of Durga. She is controller of the material energy. And controller of the material energy, so imagine everything in this material energy is controlled by Goddess Durga or Goddess Parvati. So everything is at his disposal. Imagine the amount of wealth, amount of riches, amount of opulence that is at the disposal of Lord Shiva as the husband of the controller of the material energy. But we never see Lord Shiva enjoying the material energy. We never see Lord Shiva having an opulence palace or wearing beautiful costumes and having beautiful jewelry, adorning himself and enjoying with his wife. We never see Lord Shiva. We never hear of any pastime of Lord Shiva like that, nor do we see any pictures of Lord Shiva like that. What do we always see Lord Shiva as? We see him as being shown as the completely detached, as a renunciate. In fact, he doesn't even wear proper clothes. He is just draping a deer skin around his lower body. And what does he wear? He wears ashes on his body from the crematorium. And what jewels does he wear? He actually has snakes and scorpions on his body. Or he has a garland of skulls around his neck. So these are Lord Shiva's decorations, instead of all the decorations of the material energy which are there at his disposal. But what do people go to Lord Shiva for? They know Lord Shiva is Ashutosh. He is the one who can be quickly satisfied, who gets pleased very quickly. So what do they go to Lord Shiva for? They go to Lord Shiva to get more and more and more material opulences. These are the prayers usually which people do which pray to Lord Shiva. And Lord Shiva being Ashutosh actually grants all these prayers of his devotees. So we see, in fact, in the Krishna book also it is mentioned in one of the later chapters. It is mentioned that the devotees of Lord Krishna are always very poor. And the devotees of Lord Shiva are always very rich. But the masters are different. The opposite is true of the master. Shiva's devotees are very rich, but Lord Shiva himself lives as a renunciant on top of Mount Kailash. He doesn't have a proper house also. Not even a hut. He is just sitting on the mountain, meditating on Lord Krishna. Not wearing proper clothes, not having any decorations on his body. On the other hand, we see Krishna. His devotees are always poor because he is Hari. Hari means he always takes things away. But he himself is living in opulence. He is always decorated very nicely, wearing the beautiful jewels, enjoying with the gopis and living in palaces. So we see this contrast is described in the Krishna book. So that is the difference. People go to Lord Shiva for opulences. People go to Lord Shiva to get, you know, whatever the material energy, whatever happiness the material energy can offer them. The temporary happiness which material energy can offer them. But they do not learn from the master to whom they are praying. They do not learn that, see our master, he himself is living like this, like a renunciate. He himself is not using whatever is there at his disposal for his own satisfaction, for his own sense gratification. He is living so simply. That is something which people fail to understand. And that is the glory of Lord Shiva. As one of the Mahajans, he is setting an example of renunciation. Also, we know the pastime of, once Mayadanav, he had actually wreaked havoc amongst the devatas and the devotees. So he had wreaked havoc, he was attacking all the devatas and the devotees. And he had created three mystic cities which were floating in the air. Because Mayadanav had lots of mystic powers and he was also very good in construction, he was very good in architecture. So he had created three floating cities in the air and through those three floating cities he was attacking the devatas and demons. And these mystic cities in the air used to disappear, come at the will, and the devatas were not able to defeat Mayadanav. And therefore they approach Lord Shiva to take his help. They actually approach Vishnu, but Vishnu always wants to glorify his devotees. Like we see in the Mahabharata war also. Krishna was capable of defeating all the Kurus. And he shows that in his universal form to Arjuna. That how he is devouring all these generals who are present in the Kaurava army. Because they had taken the side of Adharma. So he was capable himself alone to completely annihilate the Kaurava army. But he tells Arjuna that I want you to have the glory. I want you to have the credit and therefore you fight. Just as my instrument you fight. Otherwise their end is actually destined by me. So in the same way Vishnu wants to glorify Lord Shiva in this situation. His dear devotee. And he therefore tells all the demigods that you all go to Lord Shiva and he will solve this problem. And then Lord Shiva actually comes and he is very easily able to annihilate these three mystic cities which Mayadanav had created. So these three mystic cities were called as Tripura. Pura means city and three means three. So they were called as Tripura. And because Lord Shiva helped in annihilating these three cities, one of his name is Tripurari. So this is the glory of Lord Shiva, how he is always thinking about the welfare of others, of people who take his shelter. He is quickly satisfied, but it depends on what prayers have been offered. So because people who don't know what is the highest truth, people who don't know what should be prayed for, they go to Shiva with these desires that, oh, satisfy our material desires, give me more rich, give me more wealth, give me a better husband or better wife. And then Lord Shiva fulfills those desires. But here the devatas had gone because they were in distress. So he fulfilled this desire also of the devatas. And he became famous in the world as Tripurari for having killed Mayadanav and for having destroyed these three cities. So we see that he always likes to protect devotees who take his shelter. Depending on what desire they come to him with, he satisfies those desires of people who take shelter of him. And one of the greatest pastimes which is mentioned in the Bhagavatam, which shows this quality of Lord Shiva, that how he was always thinking of the welfare of people who were in distress, is the pastime of him drinking the poison which came out of the churning of the milk ocean. So there it is described that the devas and the demons, according to the instructions of Lord Vishnu, they have actually come at a truce and together they are working to produce nectar from the milk ocean. So they are using the Mandara mountain to churn as a churning rod and they are using Vasuki as the rope. And one side the demons are holding and one side the devatas are holding. And the churning pastime is going on. The churning of the milk ocean pastime is going on. So we won't go into the detail of that pastime. But once they start churning, they were expecting, you know, the whole pastime of churning is happening because they wanted to have nectar from the milk ocean. And they wanted to drink that nectar and all of them wanted to become immortal. The devatas also wanted to become immortal, gain immense strength. And the demons also had the desire to become immortal. And both were hoping the nectar will be mine. They were not, you know, they did not know what the plans of the Lord were. Both were hoping, oh, the nectar is going to be only mine and we will become immortal. Both parties were thinking like that. So, but they started churning and instead of nectar, what is the first thing that came out? The first thing that came out was poison by the churning of the milk ocean. And it is the same thing that happens when we take to Krishna consciousness. We start chanting, we are told that, oh, chant this Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. It is the highest mantra of this Kali Yuga for deliverance. It will give us directly love of God. The Hare Krishna Maha Mantra has the power to deliver Krishna to us. It has the potency to invoke love for Krishna in our heart. But what do we see when we start chanting? We first see the poison of our anarthas coming out of our heart. And Prahladananda Maharaj was once saying that, you know, before we started chanting, we didn't even know we had a mind. But when we start chanting, we see how the mind is disturbing us so much during our chanting. So we see that all our anarthas, all those things which were there in our heart, first all those things are coming out. The poison is coming out of the heart before we can experience the nectar or the love of Krishna consciousness. But it is important that this poison is first removed. And in the same way in the churning of milk ocean, it is important that the poison was first removed so that the nectar could be then obtained. So this whole poison came out and that was a very, very deadly poison called the halahal poison, which came out during the churning of the milk ocean. And that halahal poison, actually the whole ocean filled with that. And it is said, it is mentioned in the Bhagavatam that it started spreading and even just the fumes of that poison were so deadly that living entities all over the world started choking because of inhaling those fumes. It was such a deadly poison. And the devatas and demons, both of them didn't know what to do because such a big amount of poison had come out. They were not expecting this. They were expecting some nice nectar to come out so they could drink it. So then immediately they take shelter again of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And they go to Him and once again we see over here that Krishna is capable of mitigating anything that happens. In fact, during the churning of the milk ocean, it is explained that Lord Krishna takes so many forms just to help the devatas and the demons in this pastime. Actually, when they started churning the Mandara mountain, which is made of solid gold, because it's so heavy, it sunk to the bottom of the ocean. And again, they were distressed, oh, what to do? This rod is so heavy, it's sinking to the bottom. So immediately, Krishna took the form of a Kurma avatar. And he took the whole weight of the Mandara mountain on his back. And then he was used as the base or as the pivot on which the churning rod was then rotated. So in this way he helped them in so many ways. He also took a form, thousand arm form, and he was standing on top of the Mandara mountain also helping the devatas and the demons. And when you know Vasuki, because they started churning, from Vasuki's mouth lots of fire started coming out because of the heat. And again he immediately showered rain, like nice cooling breezes and rain he showered. So in so many different ways Lord Krishna was helping them. So do we think he is not capable of helping them when this poison had come out of the ocean? But here he wanted his greatest devotee Lord Shiva to be glorified. So he tells all the devatas and demons to approach Lord Shiva, who was sitting on top of Mount Kailash with his wife Parvati. And the devatas and demons go to Lord Shiva. And there are very nice, very beautiful prayers which they offer to Lord Shiva. And in those prayers, actually they are addressing Lord Shiva as the Supreme Lord. But Prabhupada says that it is not wrong. Because it is important to understand Shiva Tattva. And it has been very nicely explained in the Brahma Samhita. The verse is there, Kshiram Yatha Dati Vikara Vishesha Yogat. That verse is there in the Brahma Samhita, which explains the position of Lord Shiva. So Lord Shiva has a unique position in this world. He is not Jiva Tattva. He is not like one of us, one of the living entities. Neither is he completely Vishnu Tattva. But there is another, you know, there is a special Tattva only which is there for Lord Shiva, which is called as Shiva Tattva. And that is explained in Brahma Samhita as milk being transformed into yogurt. So we know yogurt is made of milk only. But the cause of the yogurt is actually milk. But it is just a transformation. When some acids are added into milk, it transforms into yogurt. So that yogurt is Lord Shiva and the milk is Lord Vishnu or Krishna. So he is just a transformation of Vishnu Tattva and therefore he has his own Tattva called Shiva Tattva. So Prabhupada explains that actually Lord Shiva is non-different from Lord Krishna or Lord Vishnu. In fact, in the spiritual world, he is known as Sadashiva. And there is a loka called Sadashiv Loka in the spiritual world, where Lord Shiva eternally resides in his form which is non-different than Lord Vishnu. But when he comes in the material world, because to render service to Lord Vishnu, he becomes in charge of the mode of ignorance. And therefore we see him associating with the crematorium, with the ghosts and goblins. Because he has taken that service, thankless service of delivering people who are in the mode of passion and ignorance. That is the Lord Shiva. But he is actually a representative of Lord Vishnu and he is non-different. And therefore it is not wrong in the Bhagavatam when we hear that these people are offering prayers to Lord Shiva, addressing him as the Supreme. So they offer beautiful prayers to him. And they tell him that right now we are distressed because this poison is spreading all over the world. And it is choking us, the fumes are choking us. So you please come and help us. And at that time, Lord Shiva talks to Parvati, Goddess Bhavani, who is sitting with him. And he tells her that whenever someone is in distress and someone takes shelter of us, we have to help that person out. So therefore, what do you think I should do? And Prabhupada says there that before taking this important decision, Lord Shiva is a grahastha. So he is consulting his wife. He is taking the permission of his wife. And then his wife gives him blessings and permission. And then Lord Shiva goes ahead to help the demigods and demons. So then he comes down to where the churning of the mandara, of the milk ocean was happening. And this whole ocean of poison was there. But what does Lord Shiva do? He condenses that whole ocean of poison into one palmful of poison. So imagine how concentrated that poison would be. It was a whole ocean which was then condensed into a small palmful. And then Lord Shiva very easily drinks that poison. And because he is doing this service for the Lord of drinking poison, and that poison when it reaches his throat, it creates a bluish mark, a blemish on his throat, which is called as, and therefore he is called as Neelakantha. Neelakantha, or sometimes he is also called as Kalakantha, because his throat became bluish black because of the effect of poison. So we see sometimes when you have such blemishes on your body, they are actually a blemish. It's like a reduction or, you know, it's like an impingement on the beauty of a person if they have such a blemish. But this blemish on Lord Shiva actually increased his beauty, or it increased his flame and glory. And that was the purpose of Lord Vishnu in engaging Lord Shiva in this service. So he became famous all over the world as Neelakantha, as the one who could drink this poison which nobody else could handle. And in many purports, Prabhupada explains that people actually try to imitate Lord Shiva. They try to imitate Lord Shiva by drinking, they think that, oh Lord Shiva, the followers of Lord Shiva actually, by drinking ganja or by drinking hashish, taking drugs, drinking bhang. These are all typical things which we see, which followers of Lord Shiva do. But Prabhupada says that if you want to follow, then follow this pastime. He was able to drink an ocean of poison. Will you be able to do that? Prabhupada always quotes that example of Lord Shiva. And therefore he says that follow the example of Lord Shiva in the right ways. Follow his renunciation. Follow his devotion to Lord Krishna. Follow his example that he is establishing that Lord Krishna is the supreme. And how worshipping him is the highest worship. Not worshipping me. He is not establishing, he is the supreme. So these are the examples Prabhupada says we need to follow about Lord Shiva. And he is the greatest devotee. He is paradukha dukhi. He is always engaged in the welfare of living entities who are suffering and who take his shelter, who are distressed. In fact, after he drinks the poison, the Bhagavatam glorifies Lord Shiva's position. And in one of the verses in that chapter, 7th chapter, where this whole pastime is mentioned in the 8th canto, the 44th verse says, it is said that great personalities always accept voluntary suffering because of the suffering of people. And this is considered the highest method of worshipping the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And that is the position of Lord Shiva. He is accepting the greatest suffering because he sees people suffering. So he is happy to take that suffering unto him. And that is the greatest service which one can render to Lord Krishna or to Lord Vishnu. By mitigating the suffering of people, accepting their suffering and actually relieving them of their distress. That is the position of Lord Shiva in this material world. That is the service he likes to render to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And that was his whole purpose in drinking this poison, which made him famous as Nilakantha. And we see the same Shiva when he came in Gaura Leela as Advaita Acharya. So Advaita Acharya is a combination of Sadashiva and Mahavishnu combined. So Lord Shiva came as Advaita Acharya, and as Advaita Acharya also he was feeling the same compassion in his heart for suffering living entities. His quality of Paradukha Dukhi was so much called upon in that avatar as Advaita Acharya. He saw the same poison which he saw at that time during the churning of the milk ocean. Advaita Acharya saw the same poison spreading in Kali Yuga. He saw the poisonous effect of Kali Yuga taking place when he was there and on this earth. He saw it in the form of materialism. He saw the poisonous effect of Kali Yuga in the form of atheism, in the form of impersonalism, in the form of people turning away from the right path of devotional service. He saw that in the form of even jnana. People were just engaged in useless jnana and they had forgotten the real purpose of life. So Advaita Acharya saw this poison spreading in the material world, in Kali Yuga at that time. And this poison which he saw spreading was actually more deadly than the poison during the churning of the Mandara, the milk ocean with the Mandara mountain. Because that poison which came out, the halahal poison which came out of the churning of the milk ocean, that poison would have harmed only the physical bodies of people who were inhaling the fumes or who would have drunk it. But this poisonous effect of Kali Yuga, which Advaita Acharya was watching, was killing the very soul, was killing the propensity of the soul to take shelter of Lord Krishna. So this poison was more deadly because it was not just harming the physical body, but it was harming the subtle body. The consciousness of the people were getting damaged because of the poisonous effect of Kali Yuga. And again Advaita Acharya or Lord Shiva in the form of Advaita Acharya felt so much compassion. So he actually, Advaita Acharya was very comfortable. He had the association of exalted devotees like Srivas Thakur, Haridas Thakur, and he was nicely doing his own bhajan, his own Krishna consciousness with the devotees. But no, he did not satisfy himself just with that. You know, as we said, it is said that great personalities always accept voluntary suffering to mitigate the suffering of others. And he knew that is the highest service to the Lord, which pleases the Lord. So he actually started praying to the Lord. And that famous song is there, which Bhakti Charu Maharaj sings, Hu Kari Garjanadi. Like, you know, Lord Advaita, Hu Kari means with a great voice, Garjanadi, like a lion he was roaring for Gauranga Mahaprabhu to appear. And he was praying that, oh my Lord, see the people in this Kali Yuga, how they are suffering right now. See the poisonous effects of Kali Yuga that has spread right now. I'm not able to see these people suffering. My Lord, you need to come, you need to come, you need to come and save these people. And you need to come to spread the glories of the holy name, to give them pure love of Krishna. That was the prayers of Advaita Acharya. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, in Chaitanya Bhagavat specially it is described, that it is only because of Advaita's prayers he forced me to actually descend from Golok Vrindavan into Navadvip Dham in this Kali Yuga. It was only the compassion of Lord of Advaita Acharya which has compelled me to come down to this material world. So again, that is one more quality which Lord Shiva is demonstrating as Advaita Acharya. How he is Paradukha Dukhi. And how Lord Shiva is always eager to render service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead by mitigating the suffering of other living entities, by showing them the path as one of the Mahajans, by showing them the path of true devotional, of pure devotional service, of going back to Godhead. And we see that Lord Shiva is also showing, not only showing the path of how to go back to Godhead, but he also renders the service of keeping unscrupulous people away from the pristine teachings of Srimad Bhagavatam, from the pure teachings of devotional service. And how does he do that? He does that in his form of Adi Shankaracharya. So it is mentioned in the Shiva Puran during a conversation between Lord Shiva and Parvati. Lord Shiva is telling Parvati that in Kali Yuga, I will come down as a Brahmana boy and I will spread what is known as Mayavadam Asat Shastram. So he says that I will actually spread a philosophy which is not true, a false philosophy I will spread, which is called as Mayavad philosophy. And I will see to it that people who are not interested in pursuing pure devotional service, they all actually come to this path. So again, Prabhupada describes that Lord Shiva did, you know, he knew, he is the greatest devotee of Lord Vishnu. He is a Mahajan. So he knows what is the purest teachings. He knows the Sat Shastras or the Srimad Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita, all these scriptures which glorify the Supreme Personality of Godhead are the highest truth. He knows that. But still he comes and he comes as Adi Shankaracharya and he spreads Asat Shastra. He spreads the philosophy of Mayavad only because he wants to keep all these unscrupulous people away from the Vaishnavism, path of Vaishnavism. Because if these people then mix with Vaishnavism, they will spoil the pure teachings of Vaishnavism also. So Lord Shiva wants all these people to follow him. So that there is a different sampradaya where these people are engaged. And those people's minds are occupied over there. And that is the service Lord Shiva is rendering. Once again to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He also renders the service by attracting the mystic yogis to him. People who are jnanis, who are transcendentalists, who are not on the path of bhakti, who know that they are not the body, the spirit, soul, but they are not ready to take the path of bhakti. Such transcendentalists, mystic yogis, again Lord Shiva keeps them attracted to him. And we read in the, like, you know, the Journey Home book by Radhanath Maharaj, we read the pastime of the Naga Babas. So he visits all these, you know, still there are these sages living in the Himalayas. They're Naga Babas who are great worshippers of Lord Shiva. And there Maharaj says, Radhanath Maharaj mentions, that he actually saw these Naga Babas having so much mystic potency. So they are again, you know, following, imitating Lord Shiva sort of. They are always covering themselves with ashes. And they are living near crematoriums where all these ashes are burnt. And they take those ashes and they apply it on their body. And they are always praying to Lord Shiva for mystic powers. And Lord Shiva is Ashutosh. So he is actually fulfilling these desires. And he gives them so much mystic powers. And it is said that these Naga Babas, Maharaj says he could see them actually performing mysticism. He could see some of them floating in air. And they were almost, you know, few feet above the ground and they could levitate themselves for a long time. They could just be in air and sit and, you know, sit means sit in air and meditate for a long time. So there were so many mystic powers they could demonstrate. They could actually withdraw their life air. And if, you know, a doctor comes and checks, he would declare that person to be dead. But they had that mystic power of withdrawing their life air and being in that state for a long time. So these are some of the mystic powers which Lord Shiva grants to his followers. But this is again to keep these people who are not interested in the pure teachings of Bhagavad Dharma, to keep them away, to not allow the pure Bhagavad Dharma to get spoiled by allowing all these people to mix with the Bhagavad Dharma. So this is another service Lord Shiva is rendering. But he is not just doing that service of keeping people away. But because he himself is a pure devotee, he has started his own sampradaya called the Rudra Sampradaya. And this is again to keep pure devotees, to help pure devotees to go back to Godhead, to worship Lord Krishna. So as in Rudra Sampradaya, we see that there is the greatest proponent of Rudra Sampradaya was Vishnu Swami. And then there is Vallabhacharya. Vallabhacharya is the Pushti Mark. We see temples, so many temples of Vallabh Sampradaya all over India. So as Lord Rudra, he is also establishing a pure Sampradaya also, where he is propagating the pure teachings of Bhagavatam and he is propagating Krishna, pure Krishna consciousness. And therefore Lord Shiva is also called as Charachara Guru. Chara Achara Guru. Chara means Chara Achara. He is the spiritual master of both animate and inanimate objects. Or he is the spiritual master of living entities, both who are in the mode of ignorance as well as who are in the mode of pure goodness. He is the spiritual master of both. So he is known as Bhutnath. That means he is the Lord, spiritual master of Bhutas, the ghosts and the goblins and all that. All such type of living entities. He is also called as Bholenath. That means he is the spiritual master of the innocent people. And as you know, the Rudra Sampradaya, he is also the spiritual master of the pure devotees. So we see how in different aspects Lord Shiva is trying to render service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He himself is ready to take, you know, that defamation. Like Adi Shankaracharya, Prabhupada actually smashes Mayavad philosophy in so many places. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says that Mayavada Bhashya Sunile Hoi Sarvanash, that one should not listen to Mayavad Shastra or Mayavad philosophy. But who had started that? It is Lord Shiva only as Adi Shankaracharya who came and spread that philosophy. But that was a service he was doing for the Lord. So his name is actually being smashed, his philosophy is being smashed. But still he is ready, rendering that service because he knows that this will please the Lord if he keeps all these people away, all such people who are unscrupulous people, if he keeps them away from pure Bhagavad Dharma. So he is ready to take, as a Mahajan, he is ready to take that defamation on himself. And we also see Lord Shiva's position in the holy dhams. He himself being a pure devotee, he likes to be in the holy dhams. He likes to be where Lord Krishna's pastimes are being performed, Gauranga Mahaprabhu's pastimes are being performed. He likes to be with his devotees. So it is mentioned that he is there in all the holy dhams. In Vrindavan, he is there actually as Gopeshwar Mahadev. And the pastime of Gopeshwar Mahadev is that once Lord Shiva was sitting on Kailash Parvat and he was deep in trance. And at that time he heard the beautiful vibration of Krishna's flute. And then he goes down and he sees that Lord Krishna is ready, getting ready to take part in the Maharas Leela. And immediately Lord Shiva develops that desire, because he is a pure devotee. He develops the desire that, oh, I also want to take part in Ras Leela. So he actually tries to enter the Rasasthali where the Ras Leela was to take place. But Yogmaya was standing there. She was like the assessor, allowing or disallowing people from entering the Rasasthali. So she sees Lord Shiva and she says that, no, you cannot enter this Ras Leela. But Lord Shiva expresses to her that, I'm so eager to experience this love which the gopis are experiencing, and I want to relish this highest rasa of Lord Krishna in the Ras Leela. And then Yogmaya says that, no, you cannot enter, because only one male is allowed inside, and that is Lord Krishna. No other males are allowed in the Ras Leela. So then Lord Shiva says, but what do I do? So Yogmaya advises him that you go and take shelter of Vrinda Devi. So Lord Shiva goes to Vrinda Devi, and Vrinda Devi says that, okay, since no other male can enter, but you have such a strong desire to enter, you must take the form of a gopi. So she takes him to Mansarovar. Now Mansarovar is a sarovar which is filled by the tears of Radharani. So it is such a pure place, such pure waters are there. So she makes Lord Shiva take a dip in Mansarovar. And when Lord Shiva comes out, he has taken the form of a gopi. And then Vrinda Devi allows, and Yogmaya allows Lord Shiva to enter the Ras Leela. And Lord Shiva experiences the bliss of dancing with Lord Krishna, as, you know, taking the form of a gopi. So in the form of the gopi, he actually dances. Lord Krishna dances with Lord Shiva. But Lord Krishna after that sits down for some time to take rest. And he says that, I'm not able to experience the same bliss which I used to experience. There is definitely something wrong. Someone is present over here who should not be here. So then I think Lalita Sakhi gives the task to Lalita Sakhi to go and check whether every gopi, you know, who should be there is only there, or somebody else has entered the Ras Leela. So Lalita Sakhi goes and lifts the veils of all the gopis. And she checks that, yes, everyone is a gopi only. No male has come disguised in the form of a gopi. So then she goes and tells Lord Krishna that, no, everyone is a gopi only, but there is one gopi who is very strange. She has three eyes. Immediately Lord Krishna realizes, because obviously he is Antaryami, so he immediately realizes that, yes, this is Lord Shiva, my greatest devotee Lord Shiva, who has come to experience Ras Leela. So he tells Lalita Sakhi, okay, you bring that gopi to me. And then he talks to Lord Shiva. He says that, I know you are Lord Shiva and you have come here to experience the Ras Leela, but now you have already experienced it, so please don't be in the Ras Leela anymore. But I want you to become Gopeshwar Mahadev. I want you to protect the Rasasthali or these Ras Leela, and not allow other, you know, unqualified people from entering this Ras Leela. And from that time onwards, Lord Shiva has taken the position of Gopeshwar Mahadev. So he is standing there outside the Rasasthali, or the place where Ras Leela happens, protecting the dham, protecting that place from not allowing unqualified people to enter. So that is how he is Kshetrapal, or he is protector of the dham. And it is said that in the evening, in the morning always Gopeshwar Mahadev is worshipped as Shiva, and the evening that deity of Gopeshwar Mahadev is dressed as a beautiful gopi every evening in preparation for the Ras Leela. That is the mood in which Lord Shiva is worshipped in that temple. Again in Govardhan Lord Shiva is present as Chakaleshwar Mahadev. So when we do Govardhan Parikrama, his temple comes on the way. And the pastime of Chakaleshwar Mahadev is that, you know, again Lord Shiva is showing how much he is attached to the devotees of the Lord. And he understands how, you know, being in the association of devotees of the Lord is the greatest welfare or the greatest wealth of this world. So Sanatan Goswami used to sit near Chakaleshwar Mahadev temple, and Sanatan Goswami used to write his books over there. But as, you know, we see even today in Vrindavan, so it was there at that time also. that mosquitoes are too much there in the evening, especially in Vrindavan. And mosquitoes are always troubling Sanatan Goswami when he was writing his books. So many days Sanatan Goswami tried to tolerate. But because the mosquitoes were providing a hindrance in his rendering of service to the Lord, Sanatan Goswami decided that I really need to now change my place. Because he was not actually disturbed by the inconvenience the mosquitoes were causing him. But because they were hindering his writing efforts for the Lord, he was thinking, you know, the previous night that, oh, I will have to now change. And I will have to actually go from this place because these mosquitoes are troubling me so much. And Lord Shiva immediately understood that this great devotee Sanatan Goswami is going to go away and he will lose the association of Sanatan Goswami. So immediately Lord Shiva goes to the demigod who is the controller of mosquitoes. So imagine there's a demigod for controlling mosquitoes also. So Lord Shiva goes to this demigod and he tells the demigod that he says that this great devotee of the Lord Sanatan Goswami is trying to render some service and your mosquitoes are going and providing hindrance on his service, providing obstruction. So can you please take care of that? He gives actually a command to the demigod. And the demigod immediately agrees. He says that yes, I will see to it that mosquitoes don't trouble Sanatan Goswami anymore. So then Lord Shiva comes. You know, next day Sanatan Goswami was planning to go away. And Lord Shiva comes disguised to Sanatan Goswami. And he tells him, just one more day you stay and see. If the mosquitoes still trouble you, then you go away. But if there are no more mosquitoes or mosquitoes are not troubling you, then please don't go from here. And then Sanatan Goswami agrees. And then he sees, the next day when Sanatan Goswami is in the evening writing, he sees that there are no mosquitoes troubling him. So then he decides to stay there. So this is the glory of Lord Shiva. As Chakaleshwar Mahadev, he wanted Sanatan Goswami not to go away from there. Now again in Mayapur or in Navadvip Dham we see, again, you know, Lord Shiva is so attached to the pastimes of Gauranga Mahaprabhu also. So he is there in Yogapit. In Navadvip, we know, is, you know, divided into different dvipas. It is made up of 9 dvipas, out of which Antaradvip is the central island where Yogapit, where Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was born, where the Yogapit temple is there. So in Antaradvip, Lord Shiva is present as Kshetrapal Mahadev. His temple is there where, you know, that name of the temple is only that he is protecting Navadvip Dham. He is the protector of the dham. So he is there in Antaradvip like that. Then he is also present in Godruma Dvip. In Godruma Dvip, there is a temple of Harihara. In fact, if we see the, you know, any book on Navadvip Mandal Parikrama, this Harihara temple is mentioned as being one of the places to visit in Godruma Dvip. So Harihara temple is a temple where Lord Shiva and Lord Vishnu are present in half-half deity form. So it is mentioned, the pastime is mentioned that Lord Vishnu actually wanted to show the whole world how dear Lord Shiva is to him. And therefore he takes half of the body of Lord Shiva onto his body. So that deity is like that. Half of the deity is black, like bluish black, which represents Lord Vishnu. And half deity is white, which represents Lord Shiva. And therefore it's called Hari and Hara. So Harihara deity is there and devotees are recommended to visit this place and pray to the Lord. Because here the Lord is showing, trying to show how dear Lord Shiva is to him. And how he holds Lord Shiva's position in high esteem. So that is there how Lord Shiva is present in Godruma Dvip. And in Madhya Dvip there is a famous temple which is called as the Hamsavahan temple. So in Hamsavahan temple it is mentioned, the pastime is mentioned that Suta Goswami was describing the glories of Bhagavatam. And he was describing the glories of Gauranga Mahaprabhu also. And Lord Shiva came to know that, oh, he is describing these glories sitting on Mount Kailash in his abode. And Lord Shiva became very eager to come and actually hear the glories when Suta Goswami was describing these glories. So he mounts his carrier, which is the Nandi bull. He mounts on his carrier and he starts coming down from Kailash mountain. And very quickly he is riding and wanting to reach down to Madhya Dvip to listen to the glories. But you know, as we know that it's a bull, how fast can a bull go? So when he reaches Satyaloka, he realizes that my bull is not fast enough and I'm going to miss many pastimes, hearing many pastimes from Suta Goswami. So then he goes to Lord Brahma and he tells Lord Brahma, please give me your Hamsa carrier. Like Lord Brahma has a carrier called a swan, which is called as Hamsa in Sanskrit. So he requests Lord Brahma that please give me your Hamsa carrier. I will go and listen. I want to go fast to Navadvip. I will go and listen to the pastimes and then I'll return your carrier to you. So he places Nandibul for some time in Satyaloka. He comes on Hamsavahan, or he comes on that swan carrier. So a swan can fly. So flying at a flying speed, he comes down. And then he sits and listens to the glories of Bhagavatam, of Gauranga Mahaprabhu's glories. He sits and listens from the mouth of Sutta Goswami. And that is the place where the temple of Hamsavahan is established. And it is said that most of the year they keep the deity underwater over there to give, you know, to cool the deity down. And I think only for 3 days or 11 days the deity is brought out. And only at that time the darshan of Hamsa, Lord Shiva sitting on that Hamsavahan, people can take. So that is another pastime of Lord Shiva, and that is another way Lord Shiva is present in Navadvip Dham, in, you know, trying to be in every holy dham where Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes took place or Lord Krishna's pastimes took place. And in fact, in a similar mood, because he is always wanting to associate with the Lord. In Vrindavan it is mentioned that when Lord Krishna was born, he was a very young child, he was just born, and Lord Shiva actually wanted to take darshan of Lord Krishna. So he comes as a Baba, but he couldn't hide all his other things, all the snakes which were there on his body and all the ash which was smeared on his body. So he comes at the doorsteps of Yashoda Maiya's palace and he knocks on the door because he's eager to take darshan of Lord Krishna in his baby form. And Yashoda Maiya opens the door and she's shocked to see this Baba standing there with matted hair, with ashes on his body, snakes around him. So she gets very scared and she says, "Who are you? What do you want?" And Lord Shiva says that, "Oh, I want to take darshan of your Lala. I want to take darshan of baby Krishna." And Yashoda Maiya is in Vatsalya Bhav. So she, in her mood of a parent trying to protect Lord Krishna, she denies Lord Shiva from taking darshan of Lord Krishna. She says, "No, no, my child will get scared when he looks at you. So you cannot go inside. You cannot go inside." So Lord Shiva pleads as the Baba. He pleads and pleads to Mother Yashoda, "Let me go and see your Lala. Let me go and see Krishna." But Yashoda Maiya does not agree. In the mood of a parent trying to protect Lord Krishna from any harm, she does not agree Lord Shiva from taking darshan, and she actually asks him to go away. So Lord Shiva goes away and he's sitting in the forest and he's meditating and hoping that he would get darshan of Lord Krishna. And because he's hoping, there is a place over there which is called as Asheshwar Mahadev, because hope in Sanskrit is called as Asha. So he had that asha, or he had that hope that I will get darshan of Lord Krishna. He will show his mercy. He knows I'm waiting here to take his darshan. So there is a temple only which has been built there, which is called as Asheshwar Mahadev. So when Shiva is meditating over here on Lord Krishna in the hope that he would get darshan, Lord Krishna understands over there in his baby form that, you know, my greatest devotee has been denied my darshan. So he has to do some pastime by which he can fulfill Lord Shiva's desire. So he starts crying. And he's crying and he's uncontrollably crying. So Yashoda Maiya tries so many things to stop him crying. All the gopis also come because they hear Lord Krishna crying. And everyone is trying so many things to make him stop crying. But absolutely baby Krishna doesn't agree to stop crying. And then all the gopis ask Yashoda Maiya that, "Is there anything that happened? Did you do something? Did someone come? Has some offense happened?" And then Yashoda Maiya remembers. She said, "Yeah, some time ago when Baba came, he wanted to actually see my Lala, but I did not allow him because he was a very scary looking Baba." And then all the gopis say that maybe that is why he is crying. So I think we should bring that Baba back. Maybe some offense we have done to that Baba. So then all the gopis go in search of Lord Shiva. And when they see him found, they find him in the forest. And they actually request him, "Oh Baba, can you please come and see our Lala? He is not stopping only, he is continuously crying." So then Lord Shiva comes, his desire was fulfilled because he was meditating so much. So he comes and he, to his heart's contentment, he takes darshan of Lord Krishna. And as soon as Lord Shiva comes in front of Lord Krishna, that little baby Krishna stops crying. And they realize that everyone realizes that Krishna did not like it, that Lord Shiva was, this Baba was turned away like this without giving him darshan. And there the blessing was given then to Lord Shiva that he will be there as Nandishwar Mahadev. And whatever bhoga, like whatever food is offered to Krishna, it will first be offered to Lord Shiva. Like after offering to Krishna, it will first be offered to Lord Shiva as prasad. So the first of prasad is offered to Nandishwar Mahadev. In fact, it is said that in Nandagaon, the palace of Nanda Maharaj rests on top of this Nandishwar hill. So Lord Shiva has taken the form of Nandishwar Parvat just so that Nanda Maharaj's palace rests on him and Lord Krishna's footsteps can tread over him. So that is how great Lord Shiva is, because he wants to be always with the Lord, and he always wants to have association of the Lord. He took the form of a parvat or a hill, so that Lord Krishna's palace could be on him and he could have Lord Krishna's footsteps on him. So we see all these glories of Lord Shiva, and we see how Shiva Tattva is, you know, mentions that he is non-different, he is a representation of Lord Krishna and he is non-different from Vishnu. But we again hear the second offense of the holy name. And the second offense of the holy name is to consider the names of Lord Krishna to be equal, or to consider the names of Lord Shiva or Brahma to be equal to Lord Krishna. So we see that in the second offense it is said that we should not consider the name of Lord Krishna as equal to Lord Shiva or Brahma. So how do we understand that? On one hand we see that Shiva Tattva means he is non-different. It's only milk which has been transformed into yogurt. They are one and the same. But on the other hand we see that in the second offense this part is being said, that you should not consider the name of Lord Krishna to be equal to the names of demigods like Lord Brahma or Shiva. So how do we understand that? So the Acharyas have explained that this second offense, when it is mentioned, don't consider his names to be equal, they are actually considering the name, the position of Lord Shiva as a demigod when he comes to this material world. So Lord Shiva takes the position of a demigod when he comes to the material world, and as demigod, he is Lord Shiva. And as demigod, he is very Asutosh. So he easily satisfies whatever desires people have, like I was mentioning earlier in the class. And it is this demigod aspect of Lord Shiva which is being addressed in the second offense of the holy name, and not the Sadashiv aspect of Lord Shiva. And as this demigod, Lord Shiva sometimes gives benedictions which he actually shouldn't be giving. And we know the famous pastime of Vrakrasura. Now Vrakrasura was actually a great devotee of Lord Shiva. And he was, you know, trying to please Lord Shiva. He did so many worships, so much pujas he did to Shivalinga. But he was wanting to have Lord Shiva to come in front of him and give him darshan. But Lord Shiva was not appearing. So Vrakrasura was such a great devotee that after that he started cutting his flesh. He started cutting flesh from different parts of his body. And he started offering it to the deity, the Shivalinga. And ultimately, you know, still Lord Shiva had not come. He was still not pleased. So ultimately he was about to chop off his own head. And that time Lord Shiva then appears. And Lord Shiva says that, okay, I'm pleased with your puja. What do you want from me? And he says that, oh Lord Shiva, please give me a benediction that whoever's head on whose head I place my hand, that person should die. Now again, you know, Lord Shiva in the position of a demigod, he did not think what will be the repercussions of this action. He is Ashutosh, so immediately said, okay, so be it. In the same ways we see, so you know, so many demoniac people take shelter of Lord Shiva. Like Ravana was a great devotee of Lord Shiva. And it is mentioned that actually Lord Ram prayed to Lord Shiva. Like it is mentioned he took permission. Again, you know, Lord Ram, always Krishna or Lord Ram or the Supreme Personality of Godhead likes to worship his devotees. So in that mood, Ram is worshipping Shiva before he goes and annihilates Ravana, because Ravana was a great devotee of Lord Shiva. So here also we see he grants the benediction to Vrakrasura. And then what does Vrakrasura want to do? He wants to actually place his head on Lord Shiva only, because Vrakrasura was actually attracted to Parvati. And he wanted to obtain Parvati, and he thought till Lord Shiva is alive, Parvati will not be mine. So better Lord Shiva is out of the way. So he says that, okay, now, you know, he says, now I want to test this benediction on you only. I want to place my hand on you. And actually Lord Shiva starts running. So see, he sometimes falls into the trap of his own benedictions. So he starts running from there, and it is said that he takes shelter of Lord Vishnu. And then Lord Vishnu says, okay, I will solve the situation. So Lord Vishnu takes the form of a small Brahmin boy. And he comes in front of Vrakrasura. And he tells him that, what happened? Why are you running like this behind Lord Shiva? He says that Lord Shiva gave me this benediction that whoever's head I place my hand on, that person will die. So I want to place my hand on Lord Shiva's head. And then this Lord Krishna, as the small Brahmin boy, starts laughing and laughing and laughing. So Vrakrasura asks him, why are you laughing like this? He says, what foolish man are you? You don't know this Shiva, he just gives all these benedictions, but none of them come true. He is just like that, giving you a benediction, and you're thinking it has come true. Imagine if you put your hand on Lord Shiva and nothing happens. You will become the laughing stock of the whole universe. You're going to be so embarrassed, people are just going to laugh at you. So then that man starts thinking, because obviously Lord Krishna has the greatest convincing powers. So Vrakrasura starts thinking So he says, okay, then what should I do? I don't want to be embarrassed and become the laughing stock in the universe. He says that I'm telling you nothing is there. Why don't you put your hand on your own head and see, nothing will happen. Test it out on your own self. And actually Vrakrasura does that, and obviously Lord Shiva's benediction was not wrong. So Vrakrasura then dies. But we see that Lord Shiva, in his position of a demigod, sometimes, you know, has to act like this, giving benedictions to his devotees, which are undesirable benedictions or undesirable desires. But in his position as Lord Shiva, being the greatest servant or greatest devotee of Lord Krishna, he is the most compassionate, he is Paradukha Dukhi, trying to serve Lord Krishna in various ways. So we'll end the class here, it's already time up. And if there are any comments or questions or corrections.
What about preaching to Pratyatas?
Yes.
That's something
I had written that, but there was no time, so I didn't mention that last time.
I have got one question. How does Lord Shiva remove the false ego? She just said that he removed false ego.
Yes, so it is mentioned that Lord Shiva is a devotee of Sankarshan. And he is always meditating on Lord Sankarshan. We see he is chanting on beads and his eyes are half closed. He is in trance. So he is actually chanting the holy names on Sankarshan and he is meditating on Sankarshan. And because Sankarshan is his master, he has the power to remove the false ego of people. So that is how Lord Shiva has the power. And that is why we pray to Lord Shiva to remove the false ego. And again, we ourselves see, not only because his master is Sankarshan and that is why he has the power to remove the false ego, but we also see in his own life, although he is equal to Lord, almost equal to Lord Vishnu, and he has his own tattva called Shiva tattva, but still, you know, he doesn't have any ego about it. He takes up the service which nobody else would actually want to take up, of becoming the master of ghosts and goblins, of smearing he's a pure devotee, but he smears his body with ashes. He wears all these skulls and, you know, all these snakes around him so that these people get attracted to him and they actually worship him, just so that he can give, you know, benefit them, he can give them, do some welfare for them. So he himself is not egoistic, he takes up these positions so that he can satisfy the Supreme Lord, and that is what we learn from him. He takes up such a humble position. He also takes up the position as Adi Shankaracharya of spreading a philosophy which is totally wrong, but again he is doing it in the service of the Lord only. So that is how we learn from him, and that is why we pray to him to remove our false ego also, so that we can render pure service like him to the Lord.
Thank you for a wonderful class, Prabhupada. Just one very quick comment. In our context, in a biographical piece by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he writes that he was thinking of going to Jagannath Puri. But then Lord Shiva appeared to him and told him that, you know, you're going to Jagannath Puri, which is already very famous, but what have you done for Navadvip? So Lord Shiva told him to develop Navadvip. So that's where Bhaktivinoda Thakur started developing Navadvip. So in our context, we are endeavoring to Lord Shiva and Bhaktivinoda Thakur.
Thank you so much. I wasn't aware of this first time. Thank you for sharing from me. So as I mentioned, Yashoda, very, very nice question, but Yashoda Maya is playing the role of a parent over here. So we see in Krishna book, even in the Bhagavatam, it is mentioned that Yashoda Maya would chant so many mantras to protect Lord Krishna always, and she would be doing so many pujas, always she would be doing something or the other because she wanted to protect Lord Krishna. So even when all the demons were attacking Lord Krishna, and every time the news would come that Lord Krishna, the cowherd boys would tell that, oh, Lord Krishna defeated this demon, that demon. But somehow, you know, for Yashoda Maya, she never absorbed that fact that, oh, my son must be supreme. That is why he is able to defeat all these demons. Because she is, if you see Vatsalya Bhav, she is the topmost devotee in you know, devotees who have parental love for Krishna. And she is the topmost of that. And therefore, there is absolutely, she cannot realize at all that Krishna is supreme. And because she doesn't realize at all Krishna is supreme, she is completely covered with the feeling of a parent. Then in that mood, she is trying to protect. So, you know, they wanted to show that pastime. They wanted to bring out Yashoda Maya's greatness also, that how she is so protective of Lord Krishna, that she wouldn't allow anybody who would scare her baby. Like we see in normal life also, if you know some scary people are there, how mothers try to protect their children, isn't it? So the same way Yashoda Maya was trying to protect the baby. And they wanted to also bring out this whole pastime, wanted to, Krishna wanted to manifest this whole pastime, that how Shiva is dear to him, and if he is denied darshan, he is not happy. So both wanted, Krishna wanted to glorify both devotees. His Maya also, that how she is protective, and Lord Shiva also, that how he is not happy if he is not allowed the darshan.
In that pastime, your Maya also comes and pleads to Yashoda Maya, let him come.
Okay.
She came there. He's a very big devotee. It's a very nice pastime.
Yeah.
Very, very rich.
Okay. We'll end the class here. Granthraj, Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki.
Still, he's also in the past.
worth doing some other things in the past, you know, based on which community or which culture they come from. For example, South Indians, they may be following certain cultural aspects, some devotees, some people who worship as Lord Shiva, or something like that. So then it's very hard for those people to give up that worship. So even though they understand the philosophy, Krishna is disciplined, and you know, Lord Shiva is a devotee, it's not a sin. And you know, it is not a sin. But sometimes people are not able to give up because of the previous condition. So we don't discourage them, because otherwise their attachment to that particular worship person is from that they may give up something else. We don't discourage them, but that we will ask them to chant or to worship Krishna. So and slowly Krishna will give up that worship.
Thank you.